teleconference. My name is Howard Marks, and I'm AMP's Director of Investor Relations. With me, I have Acting CEO Mike Wilkins and CFO Gordon Lefebvre. Mike will provide a short commentary on today's business update and may also reference the release lodged with the ASX this morning. We will then move to Q&A. Before handing over to Mike, I'd like to ask you to please limit your questions to this morning's release, as we will not be answering questions on the broader business. Members of the media can direct any inquiries through to the AMP media team, and we'll have the ability to ask questions online as well. Over to you, Mike.
Oh, thanks, Howard, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us at such short notice this morning. I'm sure most of you will have seen our announcement earlier today, updating on matters we wanted to disclose before our 2018 interim results, which are going to be released on the 8th of August. Clearly, some of the updates today are unexpected, but they reflect the actions that we're taking to reset the company, to prioritise customers, and to establish a platform from which the business can rebuild. Providing value and service to customers is our key priority as we move forward, and you'll see that in the initiatives and investments we're making. We know it's going to take some time to earn back trust, but today's an important milestone in starting that process. I'm going to walk through each of the elements of the update, and then we'll move to Q&A, for which Gordon will join me. I'll start with the actions that we're taking to reset the business. Firstly, customer remediation. At our first quarter announcement in May, we said we were conducting a review of our advice business in response to ASIC's wealth management reports 499 and 515. These are industry-wide reports under which, in broad terms, ASIC's requiring the major players in financial advice to review the compliance of all advice delivered to customers over the past 10 years. ASIC has publicly outlined its expectations of the industry, and like many of our competitors, we've been in dialogue with it about the scope and methodology, including how the look-back applies. Those discussions and our own review of our advice network remain ongoing. However, as we drive forward in resetting the business, we've resolved to address this issue now and accelerate our remediation plans. Our goal is to ensure any impacted advice customers are appropriately compensated as quickly as practicable. That's not only the right outcome for customers, but it's also the right course for AMP. Based on the review of sample files we've conducted, we've reached an estimate of potential future remediation costs, which we'll provide for in our first half results. We're expecting a provision of $415 million, or $290 million post-tax, which will impact both our net profit attributable to shareholders as well as group capital. The provision covers remediation across our entire advisor network, both employed and aligned. Comparisons to other operators aren't straightforward, but we believe this is either the first or one of the first instances of remediation covering advice delivered by an aligned advisor network. The remediation efforts will be run by a dedicated program team. We estimate that it's going to take 3 years to complete the program, with annual post-tax costs of $50 million. That's in addition to the remediation provision, and we'll report those costs below the line as they're incurred. As announced today, we have several avenues for the potential recovery of remediation costs. Whilst the amounts I've outlined don't factor in these recoveries, we'd expect to recover a reasonable portion of the costs over time, and we'll actively pursue those options and provide further updates as the program progresses. Our advisors are working with us on this program. We've made substantial improvements in controls and compliance, and our view is that the quality and consistency of advice in our network is now much improved. Moving on now to our initiatives to improve value for our superannuation customers. Part of our wealth management strategy for some time has been to simplify and rationalise our product offerings in superannuation. The aim has been to improve price competitiveness for customers while also reducing operational complexity and increasing our product scale. The fee reductions announced this morning are part of this strategy, and I'm very pleased to say that they'll drive improved outcomes for around 700,000 customers in our MySuper products. These reductions will apply to both existing as well as new customers and will be implemented during the third quarter, so our customers will start to see the savings pretty promptly. These changes obviously won't affect our first half numbers, but we've estimated a $12 million reduction in Australian wealth management investment-related revenue in the second half and a full year 2019 impact of around $50 million. We'll continue to work on rationalizing and simplifying our product set, but excluding one-offs like today's announced pricing initiatives, we expect underlying revenue margin compression in our wealth management business will average around 3 to 4% per annum. In summary, this move considerably improves our competitiveness in the retail MySuper space. Fundamentally, we believe AMP is well positioned to take advantage of the growth in superannuation in Australia, and we're ready to compete for it. Turning now to the investment we've announced in upgrading our risk management and control systems over the next 2 years. As I've highlighted already, there's clearly a heightened level of regulatory and community expectation on financial services companies in Australia. AMP acknowledges that we've got to improve our risk, control and governance frameworks, and we're committed to investing $35 million per annum after tax over the next 2 years to drive that improvement. We'll report that investment below the line as the costs are incurred. In terms of where we'll invest, we'll be looking to increase our capabilities in risk management, as well as developing a more comprehensive enterprise-wide governance, risk and compliance reporting system. Moving on to the strategic review of the Manage for Value portfolio, namely the Australian Wealth Protection, New Zealand and Mature Businesses. We provided an update at our first quarter announcement that this review was ongoing, but at that stage it wasn't our primary focus. The update today is that we've now reprioritised the portfolio review, looking at a range of options with the aim of releasing further value from those businesses. At this time, there's limited amount of detail that we can share, but suffice to say we're in active discussions with a number of interested parties on all options, and we'll provide a further update when we can. Moving on to our expectations for our first half results. Clearly, it's been an unsettling first half for the company. The Royal Commission hearings in April and May and the subsequent leadership and board changes have already been well documented. In operating terms, the core Australian businesses have demonstrated resilience and have shown solid growth in the first half. However, as we disclosed this morning, that growth has been offset by weakness in our Australian wealth protection business. While profit margins in wealth protection were actually higher than anticipated, our operating earnings were hit by negative experience and capitalised losses. The largest impact was a $20 million one-off negative experience associated with reserve strengthening on a large group insurance plan which terminated on the 1st of July of this year. The loss of that plan was flagged at the time that we put our full year 2017 results into the market. This means that operating earnings in the half for wealth protection are expected to show a negligible profit. We also expect to make changes to our best estimate assumptions at the half year, particularly for total and permanent disability. However, we don't expect this to have a material impact on our previous guidance on profit margins. We'll provide further detail at the half-year results in a couple of weeks' time, but the impact of the weak wealth protection result will see underlying profits slightly down on last year's first half, something in the range of $490 to $500 million. Net profit attributable to shareholders is expected to be impacted by the customer remediation provision that I've already spoken about, as well as an estimated $55 million of other one-off costs incurred during the first half related to the portfolio review, the Royal Commission and the cost of accelerating our customer remediation program during the half. Notwithstanding the impacts announced today, AMP remains strongly capitalised. We expect to report a capital surplus over minimum regulatory requirements of in the order of $1.8 billion at the 30th of June of this year. This takes into account the impact of the customer remediation provision, as well as the capitalised losses and changes to the best estimate assumptions. The board's committed to maintaining a strong capital position. With that in mind, we've guided today that we're targeting a total full year 2018 dividend payout at the lower end of our stated range of 70 to 90% of underlying profits. Now that's guidance for the full year dividend. As we've said in our announcement this morning, we estimate that our interim dividend will be outside that range, providing us with some capital and strategic flexibility over the coming months. We've also confirmed that we won't be neutralising our dividend reinvestment program in the first half. The board's well aware that AMP's dividend is very important to our shareholders, and while it will be lower than in 2017, we remain committed to our stated payout range for this year. So stepping back, today's update is a necessary step in resetting the business. We're facing squarely into the issues that have impacted our reputation and the community's confidence in AMP. We're accelerating remediation, prioritising customers by reducing fees on our flagship super products, and investing to strengthen our risk management systems and controls. We've reprioritised our portfolio review, and we're in active discussions with a number of parties about options to release further capital from our managed for value businesses. In results terms, while the half year will be impacted by our wealth protection experience and capitalised losses, the performance of our core growth businesses have been solid and our capital position remains strong. So with those comments, let's move to questions and answers, and Howard, over to you.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, so let's open up for questions right now. Perhaps we can start with Dan.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Dan Toohey, Morgan Stanley. I've got two questions. Your comment on the 3-4% margin guidance long term, obviously that excludes the one-off and the repricing of MySuper, but does that incorporate other moving parts in the market today currently, you know, namely low balance accounts and I guess recent moves on some of the pricing initiatives around platforms?
It factors in the stuff that we've put through, Dan. So in broad terms, yes, what you're talking about, but obviously there's a few moving pieces depending on where you go.
Okay, and then the just the confidence around the 290, like how have you formed a basis of some confidence around that $290 million number?
Well, it's based on a sample that we've done of a number of advisor and advice files. So it's our current best estimate. This is obviously, as you appreciate, this is going to be a bit of a moving feast. But it's our current best estimate, and I think that we've done enough work. Well, clearly we've done enough work before because we felt we could quantify it. Obviously, we'll update you as that, or we'll update the market as that continues to play out. But at the moment, it's the best estimate of where we can go.
Okay, and maybe just finally, if you entered into a sale or transaction as part of this portfolio review, do you need excess funds to absorb the, I guess, the breakout costs associated with separating life from wealth? And I guess the capital buffer, do you need a capital buffer to support that, or how would that play out?
You're getting into a bit of speculation here, Dan, but basically, clearly if you're stripping something out from an integrated operation, then there's a cost of being able to do it. But I think it's premature to speculate on what might occur with this. What we're calling out today is that we've just reprioritised the portfolio review.
Yeah. Okay. I guess previously we had a capital buffer, though, to absorb the breakup costs. And I guess we don't have that at the moment. Is that right?
Well, we're still comfortable with our overall capital position, and Gordon can certainly speak more eloquently than I can about that. But I did call out that we expect that our surplus at June will be about $1.8 billion after all of the issues that we've called out this morning.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Peter Ryan from the ABC. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Just in general terms, do you believe that these initiatives are going to go some way to, you know, rebuilding the damaged reputation of AMP, given what you've been through this year, re the Royal Commission, etc.?
Well, certainly I mentioned during my opening remarks that customers are our first priority, and I think this demonstrates that. What we're saying today is that we, where there are issues with our customers and some historic issues that the organisation has had to face into, We want to deal with those, and we want to get those customers remediated as quickly as possible. I think that's what good organisations do when they have issues. They face into them, and I believe this is a good organisation.
And so you believe AMP will survive this without being broken up?
Well, at the moment, we're looking to the future in the state as it is. The only issue that we've called out is we are undertaking a review of our manage for value businesses. But other than that, we're looking with confidence to the future.
Okay, thanks very much for that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nigel Pittaway from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. First of all, just on the repricing, I mean, I notice you're just doing the My Super products. I mean, would you envisage this is the first of a set of repricing of products that could extend into other products you have, or was the sort of My Super chosen deliberately and that's all you feel you'll need to do to respond to sort of competitive pressures?
Well, good day, Nigel. Look, My Super is one of the larger, if not the largest, retail component that we have in our Super book, and we felt that was the best place to go to start with. And as I indicated, about 700,000 customers will get an immediate benefit, or almost immediate benefit, from what we're announcing. We'll continue to monitor where we sit competitively in the rest of the market. And, you know, over time there may be further movements, but what we're calling out is just what we've committed to today.
Okay, thank you for that. And then just homing in a little bit more on the 3-4% guidance. I mean, obviously there were some changes as a result of proposed changes in the federal budget. There's sort of rumours of or proposals for potentially banning grandfathered commissions, all of which could have impact on margins. Are we presuming that that's not included in the guidance, or have you made some allowance for that in terms of that 3-4%?
Well, the 3-4% goes back to the issues that Dan called out in his question. But really, the federal budget issues are speculation at the moment, because I think there's a long way to go before they're legislated. So it's hard to actually be able to put any reliable numbers on those, because we just don't know where they're going to finish. I think we've indicated earlier that intended to make and will be making submissions about that, because whilst there's some sensible stuff in there, we also think that there's some matters that need to be discussed a little further.
Okay. And then maybe just finally, I mean, are we right to presume that none of the provisions allowed for anything such as fines or, you know, results of class actions or that sort of thing, that, you know, that they're presumably not in any of the provisions at the moment?
This is a provision around customer remediation, although just on the class actions, we've said that we intend to vigorously defend those, and we do.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Coghill from UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mark. My questions really revolve around the capital position, and I find myself questioning why you haven't raised equity as part of today's announcement. And, you know, the flow of logic there is that you obviously have your DRP isn't going to be neutralised again. So implicit in that is that 1.8 billion of surplus capital is the level that you feel comfortable at. And, I mean, Nigel's also flagged a number of other uncertainties that lie ahead. You've got potential separation costs if you do choose to sell some of the legacy businesses. There are a whole host of potential drags on the capital position into the future. And would AMP not have been put into a much stronger position if you had raised equity today?
Well, James, we feel comfortable with the capital position as it's currently stated. This is a profitable organisation, and we expect to deal with that. We've called out what the capital position is and what we intend to do around not neutralising the dividend. But apart from that, there are no other immediate capital plans that we have.
Yeah, perhaps just to flesh that out a little bit, the 290 million, you referred to these sample files that you've reviewed. Is it possible to just give us a bit of sense of, you know, how many of those, what proportion is that across the whole business? You know, how much certainty can we actually attached to that 290 million?
Well, we've looked at enough files that we think that that we can place a reliable estimate on it, which is why we've been able to do this. You will recall that we've been calling this issue out for a while through a contingent liability note, but we think that we've been able to bottom it out. The actual outcome, of course, will be known when we pay out the last customer that's affected, and we expect that that'll be in about 3 years.
And when you refer to recovery options to partly offset those costs, is that insurance that you have as a corporate, or do you recover those from planners?
Well, we obviously, as a corporate, we have insurance, but we also believe that a number of planners have insurance. So we said that clearly we would be looking to what recovery availability was there for us, and we will do that.
And should we be thinking of that as a 20, 30, 40% recovery of that amount, or could you potentially recover the vast bulk of that?
I don't know. Basically, we've said that we think we'll recover something. The fact that we call it out should indicate that we believe there'll be some materiality to what the recovery is going to be. But until we actually look into this, and until we start to seriously remediate customers, we don't know the exact outcome either way.
And one final one from you, Mike. Also, you know, linked to this capital debate. The high level of costs that are taken below the line, you know, not surprising because that's consistent with the approach that the organisation has followed in the past. I guess my question there is, when your permanent replacement arrives, can you provide us some comfort that we're not going to see, you know, the traditional significant rebasing and another large one-off cost below the line that that person may. May apply to reset the business once again?
Well, I don't know, James, is the answer. You know, a permanent CEO may take a slightly different tack in terms of strategy, but at the moment the organisation is moving forward with the strategy that we have in place and looking forward to the appointment of a full-time chief executive.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Laf Sotiriou from Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I just wanted to follow up first on the MySuper fee cut, and I just want to be crystal clear following up from Dan and Nigel's responses. The rebasing of fee, does it include anything to do with the fee cap proposal that's in there for capping fees at 3% or removing fees on duplicate accounts, or is it just simply rebasing the fee? And can you be more specific about what fee is being rebased? Is it the asset-based fee or the ongoing monthly fee?
It's the admin fee that is charged in that, and it deals only with the issues before us at the moment, because as I said previously, a lot of the other changes that have been mooted are not legislation, and we think we're speculating if we move beyond that.
Sure, I understand that you're speculating, but we also have to make a call on that, and I just need to make sure that whether you've already factored in the 3% fee caps and stuff or not in that guidance, which you haven't, which is clear. In relation to the one-off compliance restructure, reformat, and ongoing remediation costs, I just want to better understand how this compares to some other costs that were flagged in February at the 2017 result. At the time, you flagged ongoing business restructuring costs in 2018 of $35 million and $20 million. Is this going to be in addition to what you've flagged today, or is that being packaged up with what you've got in today's announcement?
I think I'll get Gordon to deal with that one.
I think that we flagged that there would be an equivalent, broadly equivalent cost in the first half in relation to the portfolio review. These are different costs again to what it is that we had at the full year. So the cost of the program.
So we can still expect that 35 and that 20-odd?
I'm not recalling the 35. We certainly have called out today that there are going to be $55 million of one-off costs in the first half, and that those would encompass things that we had called out at the full year. We've also extended that to include the Royal Commission and also the costs that we've actually incurred in this half related to accelerating the remediation program.
Okay. I'll go back and look at that. I'm pretty sure you did. But just to clarify, so a lot of this is one-off costs. Is it not the case that you think going forward AMP is going to rebase its overall compliance cost higher, given what's happening? Or are you saying that the amount that you're spending ongoing in compliance is what you expect to spend in the future?
Well, we'll look at the compliance costs on an annual basis. This is a spend that we're saying over and above, and I called out during my opening remarks where we see that going, including upskilling, but more importantly, putting in place a more comprehensive enterprise-wide governance, risk and compliance reporting system.
All right, not a problem. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sarah Dankert from Fairfax. Please go ahead.
G'day. I'm just tracking back to April. There was a lot of mention at the time during the Royal Commission that AMP was conducting an employment review in regards to different members of staff and their responsibility with the no fees for no service issue. Where is that up to?
That's an internal review which we flagged to the market, and that review remains ongoing in some respects.
So has anyone been terminated as a result of that review as to this date?
That's an internal matter for AMP rather than a matter for the market at large.
Okay, and just in terms of the remediation that's announced today, is any amount in that remediation lot pertain to any staff resolutions, for instance, any legal matters that might be brought against AMP by their former chief legal officer or any other senior staff, suing AMP for their dismissal? Any of that, has that been accounted for in today's remediation costs?
This is a remediation about our customers, and customers are the ones that we're focused on.
So you haven't set aside any money for any of those potential lawsuits?
This is a remediation for our customers, and that's what we remain focused on.
All right, Rupert, thanks for that, Mike.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Brett Lemassiura from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Mike, you're indicating that the underlying business is going along well. You've just got the odd one-off cost of some significant size, and yet you're indicating that the dividend is going to be cut. I don't understand why you would do that if you had plenty of capital.
Well, Brett, the business is carrying on, although it's fairly choppy waters at the moment, as you'd appreciate. So all we're flagging is that to give us some capacity to deal with those choppy waters, we're going towards the bottom end of our payout range over the course of the full year, but for the half year, we are saying that we're going to be outside that range, but it doesn't imply anything other than what I just said.
But why would you need to be outside that in the first half?
Purely to give us a little bit of flexibility into the second half of the year, and I think I called that out with my in my opening remarks.
I appreciate that, but you're saying you've got plenty of capital, so plenty of capital would imply the dividend wouldn't need to be cut.
Well, we're comfortable with our capital level. And what we were trying to signal to the market was where we see the full-year dividend and what the expectations could be, because the board hasn't finalised a decision on this, obviously, what the expectations could be for the first half.
And my final question is the fall in the excess capital from $2.3 billion to $1.8 billion from the end of December to the end of June is basically because you're paying the full year dividend and have no profit to offset it against. Is that the right interpretation?
No, Brett, I don't think that is the right interpretation. That excess of capital that we had above our target surplus has now been absorbed by the provisions we've announced today and also the best estimate assumption changes that we'll be making.
they affect profit, right?
They do, and profit okay. ultimately affects capital.
Right. So my point was correct then?
No, not entirely correct, because best estimate assumptions don't necessarily come all the way through profit unless they result in capitalised losses, which they've not. So you actually have some capital offsets that you don't see going through the P&L.
Great. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ingrid Grower from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I guess I just wanted to ask about the other guidance that you gave at the last result. I mean, obviously you've put through some one-off costs today, but how should we think about some of those other guidance comments, and in particular things like keeping costs flat for the year? And more on that point, to what extent are costs variable in the medium to longer term if pressures remain on the profits?
Ingrid, thank you for the question. We're going to stay away from any cost guidance matters during the course of today. We're only about 10 days out from the result, and we'll be giving you a full update on just where we've landed in relation to controllable costs for the half and where we're seeing costs going forward at the result.
Is there anything that you can say, though, in terms of just how variable that existing cost base is, if there was nothing that changed from today?
No, I'm not going to go there today, Ingrid.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Rodden from The Australian. Please go ahead.
Hey, g'day. And apologies if there's any background noise because I'm on the train. What's the Commonwealth Department of Public Prosecution's interactions with AMP at the moment? Is that case still ongoing?
I'm not aware of any interactions with the Commonwealth Department of Public Prosecutions.
The Director of Public Prosecution said that they're looking into into AMP at a Senate estimate hearing, you know, a couple of months ago. So AMP has not had anything to do with the DPP?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. The Royal Commission is looking into superannuation at the upcoming hearings. What executive will be appearing there, and what are the issues that are expected to be covered?
Well, we don't know whether anyone will be called. We have been named as one of 13 organisations that could potentially be called. If we are called, then obviously the identity of the individuals concerned will be revealed at that stage.
Okay, and the topics expected to be covered. Surely you must be briefing, you know, certain executives on the matters that have been raised.
Well, we don't know exactly where the Commission is wanting to go, so we'll deal with those questions as and when it puts them to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Rosenblum from ARCO Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Mike. Thanks for the information you've given us today. I guess I kind of wanted to talk about the top line a little bit, as opposed to the costs that you're incurring. The fallout in terms of your advisor numbers, and I guess you're going to have an adversary relationship with some of your aligned advisors if you're trying to recover money from them. And you know, so what's happening with advisor numbers? What do you think impact on your assets under management is going to be? Because obviously, in this first half result, we're not going to have a lot of that impact.
So, David, you're probably getting into the realms of what we're more appropriate to talk about at the time we put the half-year results into the market. You know, I would just make one comment, and that is advisor numbers are not necessarily a good proxy for what's going on in the market more generally, as well as with AMP.
Right. And would, I guess just one question on the capital. You know, having to buy books of business back, would that also, you know, go into your thinking in terms of what you're doing with dividends and capital position and all that kind of stuff?
Obviously, we've got to weigh up all of the matters that are before us. But just for the avoidance of doubt, and Gordon's going to kick me for saying this, but we're not seeing massive bowler positions being put to us.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from David Spotswood from Airlie Funds Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Mike. So ASIC, you know, the Treasury and the Royal Commission have just recently put out submissions saying, you know, there's some serious conflicts in the funds management and the wealth industry, and, you know, 75% of advisors don't comply with the best interest duty, and 90% of flows that go through aligned advisors go into in-house platforms, and up to 70% goes into in-house funds management products. I mean, is there any sort of comments you could provide on what AMP sort of plans to do to address those sort of issues? Thanks.
I think we're calling out that there's some historic issues that we've had, and we want to remediate customers, particularly around the advice space. But I think going forward, the best we can say is that we think that vertical integration is a good thing, and a good thing for consumers. And the fact that we are in the position to remediate those customers who are affected, I guess, demonstrates all of that. The best defence in terms of vertical integration is to make sure that the product and service offering that you've got is at least equivalent to the others that are in the market, and I think that's where we are.
Okay.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Michael Rodden at The Australian. Please go ahead.
Hey, sorry, I forgot to ask, with the fee changes on the MySuper product, what's the basis point fee being charged now, and what's it changing to?
That's one I'll need to pull out for you, Michael.
I can take that. So, look, there's going to be about a 45 basis point change in the fee pricing. So some of the fees starting out in the low 100 basis points will be going down by about 45 basis points.
Okay, so that's sort of like the average.
Yeah.
Look. Okay. All right. Thanks. That was it.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you. In that case, since there are none, I can see, if you have any other questions as the day wears on, please feel free to call either myself or Michael Leonard, and we'll be happy to help. For members of the media, please can you direct your inquiries through to AMP's Director of Media and Communications, Lachlan Johnson, or the broader media team. On that note, I'd like to bring to an end this morning's teleconference. Thank you.